a giant wave.
There's an ocean where giants gather to feast. Where people battle the planet's roughest seas. It stretches nearly 10,000 miles from Arctic to Antarctic.
A sea lion fight.
From tropical shallows to mysterious depths.
A man observing sea life through the glass dome of an underwater craft.
It's an ocean of extremes. Engine room for storms 1,000 miles across. Yet also sanctuary for the vulnerable. People and animals brave this unpredictable ocean, risking it all for rich rewards. This is the Atlantic, the wildest ocean on Earth.
BBC Atlantic, narrated by Killian Murphy. A starry night sky lit up with glowing shafts of pink, green and yellow, twisting and swirling above snowy mountains.
It's January in the far north of the Atlantic, off the coast of Arctic Norway. The air temperature is 10 degrees below freezing. The land is lifeless, locked in ice.
Blue ice flow beneath an apricot sky.
But beneath the surface of the ocean, the water is stirring.
A seething shoal of fish.
Billions of herring have arrived from the open ocean to spawn. And their presence attracts giants. Humpback whales.
Their snouts studded with tubercles.
Massive fin whales.
With their distinctive pleated throats. Then, with black and white markings.
Hundreds of orcas.
Seabirds hover in expectation above sharks circling dorsal fins.
Animals travel hundreds, even thousands of miles for this once-a-year event. A feast that will last for just a few weeks.
Orcas reaching the ocean's surface.
This extraordinary gathering is only possible because of one of the planet's most powerful forces. A force whose origin lies half a world away from these Norwegian waters. The Gulf Stream. An underwater current of warm water, 50 miles wide, that cuts through the ocean for thousands of miles. The Gulf Stream shapes all life in the North Atlantic, from the Arctic to the Caribbean.
The blue mass of the Atlantic in a satellite image. Life Stream. Patches of green.
The Gulf Stream is driven by winds, and it begins here, where the open ocean meets the reefs of the Caribbean Sea. Sheltering here are animals that will soon travel to the Arctic on the same journey as the Great Current.
Tiny blue fish swimming through a coral reef.
Every winter, these reefs north of the Dominican Republic are filled with the song of humpback whales.
The huge, broad, flat tail fin of a humpback suspended in still water.
This female humpback came here this time last year to mate. 11 months later, she's returned because these waters are warm and calm, sheltered by the surrounding reefs. The perfect place to have her baby.
A calf swims down to her side and nuzzles against the bulk of her body.
This calf was born just a few days ago, weighing in at a healthy 1 ton.
Its pectoral fins, serrated on the trailing edge, hang loosely at its sides.
For now, while his mother rests, the calf explores his new world.
Swimming upwards, its head brushes the surface, then its tail fluke creates a splash as it slaps the water on its descent.
But he's so young that he tires easily. He will need to be a much stronger swimmer before he can leave this sanctuary.
Nudging him gently with her body,
his mother lifts him to the surface to breathe.
The calf swimming beside his mother on the surface.
There is very little food here for the mother to eat, so she won't be able to produce milk for much longer. Soon they will have to leave.
From below, mother and baby silhouetted against sunlit water.
There are many dangers ahead. Orca attack, collisions with ships. His mother's back is lined with scars from a boat propeller. But the young calf faces an even more immediate threat from a very dangerous animal. Male humpbacks come here every year looking for a chance to mate. They compete amongst themselves for access to the females. Their rivalry can be very dangerous. Some females in these waters are looking for a mate, but not this mother with her vulnerable young calf. If she doesn't shake off the testosterone-charged males, her calf can be crushed to death in a scrum of 30-ton bodies.
Two males swimming just below the surface.
The males chase her down, jostling to get into position to try and mate with her. The calf struggles to keep up.
The calf swims close to its mother's side.
The mother guides her calf up for a breath and uses her body as a block to protect him from the males.
The males kick up a seafoam storm on the surface.
The males become more aggressive as they battle for access. Their 5-meter-long fins, edged with sharp barnacles, are swung like clubs. Their bodies can be weapons too. A breach, severely wound a rival, or crush a calf caught up in a fight.
A male propels itself out of the water.
The calf is exhausted.
Males continue to give chase as the mother and calf swim to the surface.
But finally, his mother is bigger and stronger than the males. Gets her message across.
She repeatedly brings her flippers down heavily on the water, creating plumes of foam and spray to warn off the pursuing suitors.
The males move on.
Surface foam dissipates, and the sea becomes calm again.
The calf is now 6 weeks old. His mother has done well to keep him safe this far, but her energy supplies are dwindling. She needs to leave the breeding grounds and head north.
The calf leaves its mother's side to explore.
Fortunately, her baby's diet of around 200 liters of milk a day, coupled with lots of playtime, have built his strength.
Small fish flit from his path as he swims up from the deep blue depths.
Now he too is strong enough to breach.
His head and half his body rise up from out of the water.
ready to face the open ocean.
The mother swims up to join him.
His mother leads him away from the nursery. They're headed to the fertile waters of Norway's distant shores. It's a journey they must embark on. The great Gove stream will help carry them on their way.
Flying over a vast tract of ocean.
The Gove stream is driven by winds which blow across the ocean, pushing water before them. From the Caribbean and Gulf of Mexico, the winds blow north, driving the current towards the United States. Off the Florida coast, the Gulf Stream grows in strength as it's squeezed against the land.
Waves lapping a beach.
Just offshore from the beaches of Miami flows a current 100 times greater than all the world's rivers combined. And it's a busy highway, packed with giants. Thousands of 3-meter-long bluefin tuna hitch a ride every spring, traveling north from the Gulf of Mexico to their summer hunting grounds. Swordfish, marlin, and their cousins, sailfish, also jump on board.
Like the swordfish, the sailfish has a spear-like bill.
The sailfish's 1,000-mile summer migration takes about a month. But unlike the whales, they find something to eat along the way.
Green algae.
This floating mat of sargassum seaweed is a perfect place to find food. Sargassum gives its name to a nearby sea, the Sargasso, a huge region at the heart of the Atlantic, where sailors fear to travel because of stories of ships trapped forever in huge mats of the weed. In reality, these floating islands provide food and shelter for hundreds of small fish. And that makes them a rich hunting ground. Sailfish can sprint at up to 60 miles an hour, able to chase down the fastest prey.
A shoal of fish forms a tight ball, the silvery mass twisting and turning to evade the attempts of the sailfish to penetrate it.
Their prey has only recently been discovered. The sailfish uses its long bill to flick a fish out from the shore, throwing it off balance before striking.
A sailfish swims away with its catch in its bill.
The Gulf Stream and the winds that blow it aren't just relied upon by wildlife. People have used the Gulf Stream winds for hundreds of years.
A sailing ship.
When Christopher Columbus set foot on the New World in 1492, he opened up a world of opportunities. For hundreds of years, treasures and natural riches were shipped back and forth across the Atlantic, driving the colonization of America and changing the course of human history. And none of that could have happened without the Gulf Stream winds.
The twin-masted ship in full sail, plowing a course through sun-dappled calm waters.
From the Caribbean, the winds push the current north and then east towards Europe, with such consistency that sailors could rely on them to cross thousands of miles of ocean. Even today, sailors use this ancient trading route.
Barrels in the ship's hold.
The crew of this Dutch ship use the winds to ship rum, chocolate, and coffee beans from the Caribbean back to Amsterdam.
Bare feet treading across one of the barrels, then the ship's prow cutting through the water.
Tres Hombres has no engine. She's entirely reliant on winds and currents, so the crew have to respond to every change in the breeze.
Everybody ready to worship?
Crew members man the ropes while the captain keeps a steady hand on the ship's wheel.
The crew work in shifts, 12 hours out of every 24. It's hard work, but it has its rewards.
You feel very connected to nature because you constantly feel the waves on the ship. You feel the wind when you're on deck. It's the dolphins visiting you. You feel exactly what your ancestors felt. The same waves, the same winds. So it's beautiful.
Looking down through the rigging to the ship's prow.
But as in ancient times, harnessing the Atlantic's natural power means putting your life on the line.
The rusting bulk of a shipwreck.
Over the centuries, more than 600 ships have been wrecked along just one short stretch of America's Atlantic coast, where the Gulf Stream flows perilously close to land. The treacherous sandbanks off the Barrier Islands of North Carolina are known as the graveyard of the Atlantic. But there may have been some survivors from the wrecks here. No one's certain how they got here, but many believe that their ancestors made it to shore from shipwrecked galleons of Spanish conquistadors.
Slender hooved legs plod along the shoreline.
For the last 500 years, horses descended from Spanish stock have lived completely wild on these islands.
The horses, which have tawny coloured coats, make their way through shallow water to graze on a patch of rich green marsh grass.
Today, the fertile grasses of the salt marshes support over 100 horses.
A group of five trot along in a line.
Once domesticated, now completely wild. They live in small groups of mares and foals over which stallions battle for access.
A stallion chasing after a mare, then three horses grazing in a row, the tips of their coarse-haired tails almost brushing the ground, and oblivious to the white wading birds with long curved beaks pecking at the grass behind them.
But these horses face a critical challenge. The water that surrounds them is too salty to drink. To quench their thirst, they must first dig.
One uses a hoof to dig a drinking hole in the soft, sandy ground, and another comes to share the water.
These horses are survivors. They'll even swim between islands in search of fresh grazing.
A horse walking out into deeper water, then its head held out of the water as it swims.
Marooned for centuries on this Atlantic outpost, these Spanish horses are a living reminder of the role the Gulf Stream has played in human history.
Flying over the ocean.
Offshore from the Barrier Islands, the Gulf Stream has helped to carry these humpbacks for over 1,000 miles from the Caribbean.
Sunbeams piercing the water just below the surface.
This mother and calf have joined forces with a male, perhaps to give them some protection against the increasing threat from orcas.
A spurt of water from a humpback's blowhole.
They have done well to make it this far, but the mother may not have eaten for 6 months, and her milk won't last much longer. Luckily, the Atlantic is about to deliver salvation.
A satellite view.
As the Gulf Stream passes the northern United States, a meeting of the waters helps to drive an extraordinary transformation. cold current pushes down from the Arctic along the coast, carrying icebergs with it.
Icebergs off a forested coastline.
The mingling of the two currents helps to bring nutrients to the surface, sowing the seeds for an explosion of life.
In the emerald green depths,
bluefin tuna are one of many Gulf Stream travelers that end their summer migration off New England and eastern Canada. Some of the richest seas on Earth.
A flock of birds in flight.
This rich stretch of ocean also supports seabirds in their millions and huge numbers of marine mammals. Harp seals travel together on the hunt for fish.
The patches of green water from above.
Every spring, these fertile seas turn into a rich green soup across hundreds of miles as billions of tiny plants burst into life. A plankton bloom. Individually, these plants are too small for the naked eye to see, but in such huge numbers, they are the basis for these incredibly rich seas. Tiny animals feed on the tiny plants. These in turn are preyed on by even larger animals, and so on up the food chain.
Tiny eel-like fish, then an undulating shoal of larger fish. Transparent, cup-shaped plankton.
Any animal or plant that can't swim against the current is called plankton. Most of these are tiny, but this fertile region can provide enough food for the colossus of the plankton world. This is a lion's mane, the largest jellyfish in the world. Its body alone can be wider than a man is tall. Its stinger-covered tentacles can be longer than a blue whale, catching anything from tiny shrimps to fish to other jellyfish.
The tentacles hang in a tangle beneath it.
This is a creature most would go out of their way to avoid. But one remarkable animal swims all the way from the Caribbean to southern Canada in search of it.
A small fishing boat.
In the waters off the island of Nova Scotia, people are on the lookout for these mysterious ocean predators. Zoologist Mike James and boatman Blair Fricker have worked to study and protect these animals for 16 years. But to study them, they first have to find them.
We just start watching, just start looking. Sometimes we see one on a nice day and never see him again. And you can't believe that he got away from you.
Blair and Mike are searching for a giant of its kind. But just because it's giant doesn't make it easy to find.
I think I just saw him. 2 o'clock. Right there. See where I'm pointing?
Yep.
Definitely him.
A man standing on the boat's bowsprit with a net.
Yeah, get your net ready.
Oh, she's taking a pretty good turn there. There she goes.
The problem is they're not staying. They're just coming up for breath and really trucking along. They're a few jellies, eh?
All done. Nah, it's been a while.
Just under the surface. Come up again, I think.
The nets plunged into the water.
Success at last. But this is an animal that takes a lot of skill and strength to bring on board without doing it harm.
I'd like the best if you can get her in head first.
Hang on.
Leatherback turtle. At up to 900 kilograms in weight, this is the largest sea turtle in the world. Mike estimates that over 1,000 turtles come to Canadian waters every year. He's tagged over 300 so they can be identified if they're caught again.
Oh, she's really big.
Every turtle gets measured.
148.2.
The longest ever recorded was nearly twice as long as this one.
So that's a meter plus around the neck.
Leatherbacks have a crucial advantage over other smaller sea turtles. Unusually for reptiles, they can generate body heat, which their huge bulk helps them to retain. That means they can swim beyond the warm Gulf Stream and deep into the bountiful northern seas.
Mike and his crew eased the turtle back into the water.
And Mike has recently revealed what the leatherbacks get up to in the murky depths. He's fitted small cameras to the backs of some of his turtles.
A leatherback's view of a lion's mane jellyfish up ahead.
Leatherbacks have excellent eyesight, helping them track down the lion's manes in the green plankton soup.
It seizes it in its jaws.
But jellyfish are mostly water. A big animal needs to eat a lot of them to survive. And Mike has discovered that turtles feed from dawn to dusk, eating nearly 3/4 of their own body weight in jellyfish every day, all through the summer. These giant reptiles thrive here because of the incredibly fertile seas that the Gulf Stream has helped to create. And that fertility also sustains huge numbers of a more familiar sea creature. The waters off New England and eastern Canada are incredibly rich in fish. But today, these sand eels are in the wrong place at the wrong time. Out of the murk, a stream of bubbles begins to surround the shore. The panicking fish gather even tighter together. Beneath the shoal, a scream, louder than a jet engine, pierces the water, driving the fish upwards. The net of bubbles draws tighter as the predator rises around the fish in a spiral.
A broiling maelstrom of bubbles and white water. Then the sand eel's predators reach the surface.
It's the humpbacks. After up to 6 months of fasting, they're making the most of their chance to feed.
Viewed from above.
Humpbacks are the only animal that traps its prey in a bubble net. The whales have a mouthful of giant strips of baleen. A fingernail-like material. They gulp in huge mouthfuls of seawater and fish and force the water back out through the baleen sieve, trapping the fish inside.
A humpback feeding with gaping jaws. Then an aerial view shows other bubble nets nearby.
Across a huge stretch of the ocean, hundreds of whales gather to gorge themselves. There is so much to eat here that the whales can put on enough fat over the summer months to last them the whole year. But not all of the humpbacks that set off from the Caribbean end their migration off the North American coast.
A humpback's tail fluke.
Some swim much further, heading for even greater riches on the far side of the Atlantic, where the Gulf Stream is also heading.
Waves crashing onto a rocky shore.
Off the northern coasts of America, the winds begin to blow due east. That pushes the Gulf Stream across the Atlantic towards Europe. As it leaves America, the Gulf Stream is up to 10 degrees warmer than the sea just to the north. The warm current warms the air above it, which creates a difference in air pressure, leading to even stronger winds. This helps whip up the notorious rough seas of the North Atlantic.
A tumultuous sea of white-capped waves.
But as well as creating turbulent weather, the Gulf Stream once again drives life. The flow of the current churns nutrients up from the seafloor and enriches the North Atlantic, creating a feast for seabirds. Gannets fly hundreds of miles on their fishing trips. They hit the water at up to 50 miles an hour and swim down as much as 20 meters in pursuit of their prey.
Slow motion footage shows a gannet's streamlined dive.
There are rich rewards to be had in this fertile ocean, but misjudge the conditions out here and the Atlantic's power can destroy you. And that goes for everything and everyone.
A trawler's prow is showered in spray as it rides the heaving swell of the ocean.
All around the ocean, from Canada, Iceland, France, and the British Isles, men and women brave the elements and head out to harvest the seas. Scottish skipper Davy Milne has been fishing the Atlantic for 35 years and is still in awe of its power.
I've a great respect for the sea. We're in just like a bathtub, really, compared with the Atlantic Ocean. It's massive.
Davy is skippering his bathtub into waters he knows well, but he still makes use of the latest sonar and radar to help find the fish and keep an eye on what the elements have in store. The weather comes from the west, brought by the same winds that blow the warm Gulf Stream waters over from the Americas. Davy and his crew of six seek out the places where the current drives the nutrients most strongly to the surface, creating the most fertile fishing grounds.
Rain lashes the wheelhouse windows.
But fishing these rich waters is a very dangerous job. Trawlermen lose their lives every year out here. For Davy and his crew, it's a daily battle with one of the most hostile environments on Earth.
A net is released into the water off the stern, and it trails behind the trawler as a hand pushes a throttle lever forward.
Winds blowing over 2,000 miles of ocean build up towering Atlantic swells, taller than a house.
The crew members go about their duties with calm professionalism.
But for these fishermen, this is just a typical day at the office.
The boat's stern rising and falling in the heaving waters.
Davy fights to keep the boat steady, while the massive net, filled with up to 15 tons of fish, is hauled in by the men on deck. The catch is mostly haddock, with the occasional huge cod.
The fish being sorted on a conveyor belt.
Trawlermen have to work to strict quotas, while arguments rage about how much fish they should be taking. Today, though, they'll be lucky to take any more fish at all. Off the coast of Canada, a storm has swept down from the Arctic. The spiral of storm clouds has been blown towards Europe, whipping up the seas.
Strong winds whip up a curtain of spray off the tops of churning waves. Amidst the turbulence, a lone gannet dives vertically into the water.
As the swell builds, the skipper starts to monitor the western horizon more closely. Davy will soon have a decision to make. When do conditions get too dangerous to carry on fishing?
You've always been mindful of men's lives in your hands, basically. And it only takes one bad lump of sea and you're gone.
The trawler being tossed around like a toy in bathwater.
Stronger winds mean bigger waves. Seamen have a way to describe how rough the sea is. They call it the sea state.
You'll usually get rough, very rough or high. Then you get phenomenal. And phenomenal's phenomenal.
The storm has grown very quickly, the winds reaching hurricane strength by mid-Atlantic.
Satellite imagery.
Powerful storms that form this fast are called weather bombs, and they can catch fishermen off guard.
Davy in the wheelhouse.
This is rough, even by trawlermen standards.
The boat pitches and yaws through one mountainous wave after another. Wheelhouse windows are constantly battered by spray and seawater. The boat rolls on the swell like a punch-drunk boxer.
Davy knows there are masses of fish right beneath him, but he has to weigh up the risks of staying out. He decides to turn back.
A crewman secures a coil of rope on the deck.
Turning side onto the waves is just about the most dangerous maneuver a boat can make.
The boat completes a 180-degree turn in the raging roller coaster of a sea.
And that's when your seamanship comes in. You make a decision, and you make a decision. It's got to be right, because there's no room for error.
Davy's ship isn't the only one heading home through the gathering storm.
They're following another trawler of a similar size. A few hardy seabirds follow the two trailers in the hope of an easy meal. Heading for home, the sea conditions gradually begin to improve. The murky outline of landfall appears up ahead.
As the trawlermen make it to the shelter of their harbour, the storm crashes into the coastline.
Waves smash against black cliffs, throwing up towering columns of spray that reach over the tops of them.
Through autumn and winter, storms batter Europe. Nowhere feels their force more than the coast of Ireland. Reaching up to over 200 metres, the cliffs of Moher are pummeled by over 1,000 tons of water in every wave.
Waves pounding the coastline in slow motion. Then the blinking red beam of a lighthouse perched on a rocky outcrop.
If you could harness the energy of just one storm, it could power the whole of the UK for the winter.
Waves lash a seafront.
But no one's come close to harnessing this.
A relentless rolling wall of water breaching a sea defence, like a pan boiling over on the hob. The storm surge whips up the seabed into an underwater dust cloud, uprooting a wispy marine plant.
Storms bring destruction on a huge scale. Churning seas bring up nutrients which drive huge summer plankton blooms, crucial for the marine life of the British Isles. 10-meter-long basking sharks swim up from the depths of the ocean. Second largest fish in the world, they feed on nothing but tiny plankton. Seabirds thrive, breeding in their millions,
and finding precipitous perches on cliff faces.
Puffins flock in from the open ocean where they've spent the winter. They raise their young at clifftop burrows, fishing by day in the fertile seas.
A multitude of puffins bobbing on the water, then one swimming underwater and another flying back with its catch.
Today's meal is a beak full of sprats.
The sprats held in the puffin's red and black bill.
And there's plenty of food, too, for travelers who have braved the stormy Atlantic crossing. Some of the humpback whales that spent the winter in the Caribbean feed off the coast of Ireland in the summer. The Gulf Stream helps to whip up the storms that make these waters so rich. But the Great Current also brings warmth.
A satellite image showing the path of the Gulf Stream across the Atlantic.
As it approaches Europe, the Gulf Stream splits. Part of the warm water flows south towards Africa, but the rest, now known as the North Atlantic Current, flows north, past the shores of Europe.
And up the west coast of Ireland.
The sea off the British Isles is 10 degrees warmer than at the same latitude on the other side of the Atlantic. So animals thrive here that are usually more at home further south.
An intricate branched coral.
Like the pink sea fan and the European cuttlefish.
With a fin that resembles a short, flouncy skirt.
These close relatives of squid and octopus breed in the waters off southern England every summer.
Flying over grass-topped cliffs.
The warm current is now thought to have less influence on land temperatures in the British Isles than people used to believe, adding perhaps just a degree or two to winter temperatures. But further north, it has a significant effect. Norway is 5 to 10 degrees warmer than other places at the same latitude because of a combination of the ocean current and the warm westerly winds that have blown with it across the Atlantic. Those winds are no longer the only thing driving the current as it flows on even further north, far beyond the Arctic Circle to the edge of the frozen Arctic Ocean.
A swathe of Arctic sea ice.
At the edge of the ice, a strange process takes place that draws the current up here. As the seawater freezes, it squeezes out its salt, making the unfrozen water around it extremely saline.
Snowball-like lumps beneath the ice sheet.
This super salty water is heavier, so it sinks towards the seabed, setting up a circulation as the warmer water from the Gulf Stream is sucked in to replace it.
Birds on the water.
Everywhere else in the Arctic, the sea freezes over in winter. But here, the Gulf Stream's warmth keeps a vast expanse of the North Atlantic ice-free all year round.
A calm sea beneath a creamy sky with a band of red on the horizon.
This combination of nutrient-rich water and unfrozen sea creates the arena for one of the Earth's great wildlife spectacles. It's January, and over a billion herring have gathered to spawn off the coast of Norway.
A colossal shoal of herring moves silently through the water.
It's a feast for any predator that can reach it.
A burst of spray erupts from the surface of undulating dark water.
For the humpback whales, it's a reward for their 5,000-mile swim across the Atlantic. Humpbacks can't get to most of the Arctic in winter. They can't travel beneath the ice because they need to breathe.
Two humpbacks surface side by side.
Here the Gulf Stream has opened up rich hunting grounds, though catching the fish isn't easy. The whales struggle to surround and bubble net such a huge mass of fish. And now, the humpback's deadliest enemy enters the fray. Hundreds of orcas swim in from the open ocean, moving in pods up to 30 strong.
Two orcas dive, leaving only their menacing dorsal fins above the water.
These deadly predators aren't here to eat humpbacks. They're after the fish. And they have an extraordinary technique for catching them. First, they must work as a team, coordinating their movements using clicks and whistles. They break off a section of the mega shoal into a more manageable ball. Some whales circle the herring, herding them together, while others swim deep and push the ball of fish up towards the surface.
The shoal rises and spreads out over the surface, where circling orcas are waiting.
The water boils with herring, desperate to escape their fate. It's now the orcas deploy their heavy weaponry. A 6-ton orca slaps its tail with awesome destructive power. Under the water, tail slaps are used to stun the herring.
A stunned herring hangs vertically in the water, but after a few moments it comes to and swims upwards.
Some fish come too quickly and escape back to the safety of the shoal. But most are picked off by the orcas, one by one.
A small shoal of survivors scatters from the path of an orca as it dives deeper to feast on their less fortunate kindred.
Soon the water glitters with fish scales as the orcas methodically consume the ball of fish.
An orca swims under a large dark mass of herring.
By breaking up the herring into a smaller shoal, the orcas have done the humpbacks a favor, turning the usual relationship between the animals on its head. Everywhere else on Earth, orcas are the humpback's biggest enemy. But here, the humpbacks cash in on the colossal fish supper.
With the hard work done by the orcas, the humpbacks move in to share in the spoils.
And the humpbacks aren't the only ones to gatecrash the orcas' party. Massive fin whales, 80 foot long, can swallow 3,000 herring in a single gulp.
Swimming with a languid swish of its tail fin, the fin shark's grace belies its size. Fish scales glitter like stars in the dark depths.
Deadly enemies feed side by side. A unique scene, only possible here because of the warmth of the Gulf Stream.
A humpback emits a column of spray from its blowhole as it breaches the surface.
For just a few weeks, the humpbacks will eat their fill before the herring move on.
The rays of the rising sun turn the water to liquid gold.
It's a wonderful spectacle, but its future is hard to predict. As our climate warms, more and more fresh water flows into the Atlantic from Greenland's ice caps. This makes the sea less salty. And there are signs that the salinity-driven circulation, which draws the warm current north, may be slowing down.
A humpback dives.
For now, at the end of the feeding season, the whales begin their long journey south, back to the Caribbean, but the cycle of their lives will begin again. Lives that are shaped by the awesome power of the Gulf Stream. The driving force for life throughout the rich northern seas of the Atlantic.
Flying over the burnished ocean towards the sun, sitting low on the horizon. Atlantic Diaries. A coastal town.
It's January in the Norwegian town of Andenes, far above the Arctic Circle. Offshore, one of nature's great spectacles is about to unfold as hundreds of whales gather to gorge themselves. But as the camera team test their equipment, they realize just how hard it's going to be to operate here. Director Lucy Wells is particularly worried about the lack of light.
Actual filming time, we may get an hour a day at the moment, which isn't very much and potentially could be quite frustrating because if there's lots going on but it's too dark, there's nothing we can do. We can't film anything.
The other big challenge will be the cold. With temperatures well below freezing, hypothermia and freezing scuba equipment are very real dangers. The team are particularly keen to film orcas feeding. And within an hour of leaving shore, they get lucky and make first contact. The orcas are herding a herring shoal into a ball, exactly what the team were after.
Wow.
Lucy watches the spectacle.
With just an hour's daylight, the crew rush to get in the water.
Go in, rush.
Go.
A cameraman in scuba gear swims down to capture the underwater footage.
Day one, and already the team have their first shots of the orcas.
A humpback.
And soon, the orcas have company.
Oh, there's a humpback just all coming close. Look how close he is.
Here, you get two whale species for the price of one. And it looks like the humpbacks are following the orcas around.
Two humpbacks appear to be observing orcas whilst keeping their distance.
The team are thrilled. This has never been filmed before. The humpbacks seem to take advantage of the orcas' herding skills.
Footage of humpbacks underwater and on the surface. Then the cameraman sharing a fist bump with a colleague back on board the boat.
A great start. But the team soon realized that the humpback's presence might not be such a good thing after all. Their main goal is to film the amazing herding and tail-slapping behavior that the orcas here use to catch herring.
Orcas herding a shoal of herring.
But every time the team find feeding orcas, the humpbacks soon turn up and drive the orcas away. Despite the team's best efforts, the humpbacks have become a pest and show up again and again. It's a challenge for cameraman David Reichert.
We're seeing humpbacks going back and forth all the time down there, but just not seeing the feeding event.
This soon becomes a big problem for the team. Any moment the herring could leave, followed by the orcas, and the team's mission would be a failure.
10:01. I reckon the latest we can go is probably 2:45. There's not really much time at all, and so far today we haven't got anything.
With morale already low, something happens that reminds the team of just how dangerous it can be to dive here in midwinter. One of the divers gives the signal to be picked up. Something is very wrong. It's PB, the second underwater cameraman, and he's clearly struggling. It's every diver's worst fear. His breathing equipment is frozen, starving him of air. If that had happened deeper underwater, it could have been fatal. The problem is quickly sorted out, but the team are shaken. The The only camera that's getting close to the orcas is the team's mini helicopter.
Footage from the drone skimming the water, then it hovering beside an orca.
But with the team's current run of bad luck, they should have foreseen some trouble. Thomas, the pilot, skillfully flies the helicopter straight into the smallest sign in the harbour.
Thomas hides his face in embarrassment.
He is mortified. Luckily, the rest of the team see the funny side and mount a rescue mission.
You can see the propellers going around in the boat.
A diver retrieves the stricken drone.
We're going to find out. We will have a nice funeral.
That was my toy. I'm going home.
Morale is good, but the team have now lost the only camera that was filming any orcas. The divers are going to need some luck.
Sunrise.
Quite a lot of action in front of us, guys. We have just come across a group of orcas. No humpbacks, which is a good thing. It's, dare I say it, looking encouraging. But so far, every kind of good situation we've come across that on the top side we thought is amazing, they've come up and it hasn't been good for them.
It's a tense wait. But today, everything happens on cue. The cameras start rolling, and finally the team capture the amazing behavior they came here to film.
It is magical. The herring ball towers above you. The scales of the herring catch the light and they just flicker like diamonds. And then the orcas move up to them and push them, gently nudge this ball up to the surface, where they can pin it up there, and then they come in and attack. This is one of the most spectacular natural events I've ever seen.
Back on board the boat, a high five.
Job done.
Yes!
Thank God!
They have had to overcome some very tough conditions, but through perseverance and a bit of good luck, they've managed to document one of the most remarkable scenes in the whole of the Atlantic.
Humpbacks swimming into the setting sun. Next time.
Next time, from a surface-feeding frenzy to the crushing depths of the abyss, meet the strange animals of the world's longest mountain range, far beneath the surface, and discover the origin of the world's youngest ocean.